This most likely be my last lesson on counting the cost. But I want to bring a little bit of some stuff here that I was looking at. You know, still referring to Ruth. Okay. Then I want to read something if I have time. You know, read some stuff here. What are some of the lessons you can learn from all these decision making, you know, with Ruth, Naomi, and the husband and the two sons, and then the two daughter-in-laws. You know, there was a lot of ways to attack applicational wise, you know, how lessons to be learned, you know. But I'm going to start here. I just got this one little list of things that I was thinking about. Let me have a little shot of whiskey.
Oh, no, let me delete that.
Okay. Ruth made a very hard decision. She would have to live down her family history and all her family filthy behavior. Okay? And these are the kind of people that were bad people in a lot of ways. And I went back and I read some things here that were very important. I want to read a little bit of background. Let's go to Numbers 25 for starters. Well, let's go to Genesis 19. Just kind of a little back history of the things that she was up against because of her past history. Okay, remember the whole story here, right? I'm just kind of going. This is where Lot and the daughters. Okay, let's see where I want to start here. Okay, so yeah, let's start in verse 36. I don't want to read all that, but when you read 34 back up, you can see the plot that the two girls and the two daughters were putting together to create this lewd act, you know, with their father. You look at 35. So they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and laid with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Then both the daughters of Lot, who was child by their own father. Okay, he said, the firstborn born a son and called him Moab. Okay, I don't know if I wrote down what the word Moab means in my notes here somewhere. I think it's something of the word Moab. I don't know if it means of the same father. Okay, of the same father. I'm thinking that's what it means. Okay, Moab. He is the father of the Moabite to this day. As for the younger, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Hamia. He is the father of the sons of the Ammonites, or the Ammons, which we call the Ammonites, to this day. So here you got the Moabites and the Ammonites that came out of this incest behavior. And this is the Ruth's lineage. This is her ancestry. So she had to live that down, okay? Yeah, here's what it is. Yeah, Mo means from the same father. The first part, Mo, that's what it is. I was trying to find that.
Mo.
It means Mo, like M-O.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? From means from the same father, okay? Now let's go also to Numbers 25. Now these people were not like, there was a lot of things they were not permitted to do because of the kind of people they were. And Numbers 25. Numbers 25. Starting in verse 1, 2, and 3. While Israel remained at Shechem, the people began to play the harlot with the daughters of Moab. Okay? Here they are. He said, for they invited the people to the sacrifice of their God. And the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel joined themselves to Baal of Peor. And the Lord was angry against Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, take all the leaders of the people and execute them in broad daylight before the Lord, so that they will fear the anger of the Lord and may turn away from Israel. Okay, so here God's people started getting involved with these Moabites in their practices. You know, that's why, you know, religiously we don't mingle with a lot of different religions. Okay, we can socialize with these people, but we don't, go and join in fellowship with those churches. And a lot of them, you know, they're not too far off base, you know, but still, you know, they're not a true looking Testament church. And don't think for a minute that you cannot be sidetracked one way or the other about something that you believe in. Okay? And I can think of a few things that you can get in trouble with other churches. Okay, in Deuteronomy 23, okay, so here we find these Moabites, okay, well, mostly the people that were joining up with them and getting involved in their practices, okay. Now, the Moabites were not allowed in the assembly of Israel. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 23, they were not permitted. Deuteronomy 23, starting in verse 1. Let's see. He said, no one who is, how do you say that word?
Emasculated?
Yeah, well, you know. Or has his male organs cut off. Wow. Shall enter the assembly of the Lord.
My definition here, in the side column says crushing of the testicles.
Yeah. Whatever they do, they're cutting them off. I don't know why. I don't get that. Is that a heathen practice or something? I read something like of this nature somewhere, what heathens do. Okay, but I forget what it meant by doing that. There was a reason why the heathens would do that, but right now it evades me. No one of illegitimate birth shall enter the assembly of the Lord. None of his descendants, even to the tenth generation, shall enter the assembly of the Lord. No Ammonites, see, there is the Ammonites, or Moabites shall enter the assembly of the Lord. None of their descendants, even to the tenth generation, shall ever enter the assembly of the Lord. And why? Because they did not meet you with food and water on the way when you came out of Egypt, and because they hired against you, okay, Balaam, the son of Beor, from what's that word? Bethor, of Mesopotamia, to curse you. Okay, remember that story? Nevertheless, the Lord your God was not willing to listen to Balaam. But the Lord your God turned the curse into a blessing for you, because the Lord your God loves you. You shall never seek their peace or their prosperity all your days. Okay? Okay, so this is kind of a little bit of background that I'm reading about these people, the kind of people they were not allowed or permitted to go into the assembly. Ruth was allowed to go to do so. Uh-oh. So if that was the case, she was allowed. So is there a contradiction here? Something is wrong, you would think, right? He says, but Ruth was allowed to do so. Why? It was not that she was a Moabite, not the fact that she was a Moabite. It's that she did not have the same character traits, okay, of her ancestry, nor practices or practice them. And when I was reading that, I was thinking, well, Just look at Jeremiah 23. Just look at Jeremiah 23. Just to give you an idea. You can be a Moabite, okay, but here you got Israel. Okay, just to give you an example of what I'm trying to say. Jeremiah 23:14. Moreover, among the prophets of, what's that, Samaria, I saw an offering, an offensive thing. They prophesied by Baal and
you
laid
said,
my...
You said Samaria?
Did I say...
I have Jerusalem.
Okay, well, mine says Samaria.
Is okay. That the same place?
It's in your general area. Samaria, okay. Jerusalem. But mine has Samaria. I saw an offensive thing. They prophesied by Baal and led my people Israel astray. Also among the prophets of Jerusalem, I have seen a horrible thing, a committing of adultery and walking in the falsehood, and they strengthened the hands of evildoers, so that no one had turned back from their wickedness. All of them have become to me like Sodom, and her inhabitants like Gomorrah. So you see the example. What I'm trying to say here is, okay, Ruth, she was a Moabite, okay, and she had to live down her family history. She did a lot of proving, and she had the odds against her. Very difficult decision she made, but she made a good one, and it was going to pay off, but it wasn't going to be easy for her because of what they thought about the Moabites and all the commands that God had set against the Moabites for several reasons, because of their immorality, okay, and all that, and going as far back as Lot and his daughters, you know. So there's a messed up history. How many people have come out of a generation of pure craziness? When I used to talk to my aunt, Eleanor, she knew a lot of history of our family. And that wasn't good. It was not good at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was a lot of incense too. There was a lot of that. Okay, fathers impregnating their daughters. There was a lot of that in our family. I said, wow, man. I said, yeah, what a mess. I said, yeah, we got a lot of that. Because I could never figure out the relationships there. I was all confused, you know. And she tried to explain it to me. And I said, yeah, we got a real filthy history of our families. It's really bad. Okay. Yeah, I guess it got a little better as time went on, you know. Okay, but here the Lord, He says, when He put this, that they would not come into assembly on the first generation or the second generation, okay, 10 generations, I think it said something like that. There was not any time soon they're going to be allowed to come in. So right here, when you see Ruth, she's breaking ground here. She's really breaking some ground here and doing what she did and making the decision that she made. But the whole one I'm talking about here, we're talking about God's people, but they were compared as though they were from Sodom and Gomorrah because of what they were practicing, what they were doing. Okay, what do they call it? You're characterized by association. Okay, that's not what they say. He says, if you hang with certain kind of people, they think you're the same way. Okay, they think you're the same way. So, to me, I don't say that's the reason why when I come to know the Lord that I separated myself from all my friends. Okay? Even though I was going to church, you know, even though I wouldn't drink with them, but I'm still hanging with them, in my mind, in my little finite mind, I didn't see that it was right to do it. Was it altogether wrong? But I just did. So I'd rather err on the right side. So I separated myself for at least 2 years, that I always mention, at least 2 years I didn't see any of my friends at all. And I always knew where they were at. There was times I'd be driving by, you know, and there they are, you know, but I would never stop, you know. I just kept going. I don't want people thinking that I'm going to church and I'm over here still hanging out. I said, that would be a kind of a bad testimony, okay? A bad testimony on my part, okay? So that's what I was trying to show you here, what I was reading there in Jeremiah, okay? Let me read this again. Ruth was not allowed, was allowed to do so. Why? It was not that she was a Moabite, okay? It's that she did not have the same character traits or conduct, okay? Nor practice any of the practices. You know, I got thinking about that. You know, did she ever, I've seen no, she, her, those two girls, they married with these two boys, of Naomi's boys. So I don't know if they were doing any of the stuff prior to that, very possible, but, and then when they married, okay, and then with the mother-in-law, okay, so that, you just look, I said, did they do any of that stuff? I'm sure they didn't do any of that when they were married to those two boys, okay? I know Naomi and her husband and her three sons, they were not making that pilgrimage every year back to Jerusalem like they're supposed to, okay? I'm sure they were not practicing what they're supposed to. So they went astray. So there's a lot of bad mistakes made on this whole family, starting with the husband, okay? And but there's a lot of good lessons there, I'm telling you. Okay, so she didn't have the same, she was not practicing the same ancestry practices of all this incense and stuff. And that's why I used Jeremiah 23rd chapter and verse 14 as an example. She became an Israelite in character, still a Moabite, but in practice an Israelite. So you get that? Okay. She's still a Moabite. Can't get away from that. That's her bloodline. Okay. But by practice and testimony, by her actions and the thing that she did, okay, she's showing a completely different characteristic. Well, isn't that the same thing with us? We're supposed to be, when we come to know the Lord, this has to be a complete transformation of life, transformation of mind, thinking, even things you used to do that are not exactly punishable by death or call it a sin, okay? You know, I could have kept driving my lowrider. That's not a sin thing there. But what it does, I affiliate with the world in that particular, and that's the only reason why I changed up. I wasn't even saved yet. Just the idea that I thought I was.
You might have been late for church and you'd be stuck on their driveway.
Just get off and walk the rest of the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Okay, gang, get out of the car and walk over.
Yeah.
Okay, she became an Israelite by practice. Okay, still a Moabite. Okay, remember Lot's wife? Okay, remember her? Now, we're always talking about decision-making. Making good decisions. Calculating in the process of making certain decisions. Well, Lot's wife made a bad decision, didn't she? Okay? She had too much invested in Sodom. Okay? And no trust in God. And no trust in God. And what was the only thing she did?
Turned around.
She just turned around and looked. So what does that tell us? I mean, is there something wrong because you're driving away and you just happen to look back at that city?
They say that when somebody looks at you for about 2 or 3 seconds, then there's something about you that they catch of interest. It could be anything.
Yeah.
It could be even a beautiful person. Mm-hmm. That the minute you walk in, they'll take a second look. You know, kind of like that kind of reaction. So it was kind of picture that there was something that about that city that she really was interested in, not in the negative sense. I'm sure she wasn't happy that it was being destroyed and stuff.
Well, you're on the same line that I was thinking when I thought about it. She just looked back.
Well, yeah, it's just like in movies, you know, when the lovers, you know, they apart from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Don't turn back. Don't turn around. Because if I turn, you know, if you turn around, you're going to want to come back and, you know, go pull your weight.
Yeah.
You
know. Well, see, then you've done around the line that I was thinking of. Well, what was the problem just looking back? And I wrote down here, looking back, okay, speaks volumes. Speaks volumes. God knows the heart. He knows what was going through her mind when she looked back. Okay, was she tempted to go back? Her heart was there.
Oh, yeah.
And remember, I think we read that last week. He says, where your heart is where your treasure, where your treasures are, there's where your heart's at. And like I said, she had, I wrote down here, she had a lot invested in that lifestyle. She loved it there.
Well, was it one of the commands from the angel, don't look back?
Yeah.
That was just a command.
That was the first strike.
Right.
That did her in right there.
Mm-hmm.
So when she looked back, and looking at what she's leaving behind, because her heart was into that. I mean, I don't think there was much of God in her personal life, to tell you the truth. To live in places like that, in Sodom and Gomorrah, with all the filth going on. We have been in this world today, but I wouldn't move to San Francisco. Okay, I wouldn't move to certain places where it's so concentrated. You know, because, you know, this is the thing, and this is something you just can't get people to understand. You know, but they got to be somewhere, I guess. I could have been there, but I don't want to be one of those somebodies. I had opportunity to live in L.A. a winter, and I tried it out. But one way or another, it agreed with me. Why not? Why did it not agree with me? I can think of a lot of reasons, you know. For one, you know, the apartments are expensive, but, you know, I work in the construction, you know. They make pretty good money. I don't remember how much I was making, but, you know.
For me, it's the traffic.
And you're the traffic? So
that's
my
number
one.
Yep,
huh?
That's my number one reason why I don't want to be down there. Traffic.
But see, you can blend in.
Not me.
Well, I blend in for the time over there. I got the system down. I was jumping freeway. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, I think Renee's right. Blend in.
Oh, he's blending. Yeah, definitely blend in.
It's every time when we go over there, you know, and then he always said, well, you want to go to this certain kind of museum or a park or something like that, and when you're tired, we don't want to go anywhere after that.
See, but here's the thing, that in the Old Testament, people lived nomadically. You know what I mean by that, right?
By themselves.
Nomad lives. God instructed them, he's very clear in the Old Testament, that he never designed us to be living in a city-type environment. Okay, because it's a fact. It's not because any other reason. It's a fact that the more people you got, the more concentration of what?
Crime,
sin, you name it.
Yeah.
You are tempted in so many ways that you have to fight that every day, not to get too involved. Okay? Not too involved. Okay, so I like Bakersfield because it was still a small town at that time. Okay, L.A., I went up there back in my rebel days. Even when I was there, and hearing all the fight going on and people getting beat up down the street, it just bothered me. You know, it is really like 50 times worse than Bakersfield. Okay, and then when I was working up there, so there's no reason that I thought I didn't want to be there no more. Okay, but God had other plans for me. Well, even though back then I would think he had some providential plans for me, that I would not settle in L.A. area. Because I don't know if I would have lived through it or something might have happened or something. So I ended up coming back. So, but I can give you all the reasons why I didn't want to live in that. And I'm glad I did. Then when we moved to Bakersfield, as time went on, where did we end up out in the country? Okay? And then we're at Wasco, we left out there in the middle of an almond orchard. Okay? So I've been practicing, not intentionally, but just practicing kind of a nomadic type of life. Look where we're at today. Okay? We're not exempt from crime, but, I mean, you don't see it running rampant like it does in Bakersfield, LA, San Francisco, every of the big cities, you know? So God is always intending us not to live in environments like that. Because He knows what's going to happen, you know? So it's a constant restraining yourself every day. Restraining, restraining, restraining. Okay? And I look at sometimes these movies where they show New York, Chicago, all the lighting. And they say, oh, look how beautiful that is.
Don't get too close. Don't look too close. Because it does look beautiful on the lights and the skyline, but it's like L.A. Yeah. Ginger took me there, and it looked beautiful. Yeah. Everything, the lights, the soft, like purple lights glowing on the buildings. And then we went through there, man, homelessness, people talking to themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you go down into the streets, it doesn't look as beautiful.
You get down into the trenches.
Yeah, it does not look beautiful at all.
But people get accustomed to it.
You know, the only thing I like to see when you're on TV or they show all the sceneries, you know, people traveling cross country, and they show all the beautiful, the trees and the mountains and the, you know, lakes and all that. That's what I like to see. It's so comforting. Comforting.
Yeah, so, more relaxing.
Yeah.
When I learned that, this nomadic idea, even way back in New Hope, somehow God implanted in my mind, and when Stella asked me, you know, about this, about the place out there, and this and this and that, I ended up out there, you know. But I already had it in mind, you know, just get out of town, you know, that's when once you, you know, he's gone. And I thought of for a lot of reasons why I need to be out here. I said, you know, I got two more boys, man. I don't need to lose them too, you know. So I don't stick around long enough to lose any more of my kids, you know. Even though if you keep them in your yard, man, they can come right and do a drive-by. Okay? So they don't have to run the street to get killed, you know. So I said, no. So there were a lot of reasons that got me out there, you know. And I liked it. I really did. The serenity, I didn't think I would be able to blend in that quick because I never lived outside of the city. But man, I really took a liking to that. The quietness, peaceful, no sirens, no none of that. It was just wonderful. Okay, and of course we ended up here. Okay, so remember Lot's wife. She had much invested in Sodom and Gomorrah. Okay, and no trust in God. No trust in God. Just imagine what her mind is going through. Because they wanted to go to one place, and God says, no, I want you to go over here. I want you to really get way out there. And it must have been like a no man's land. And when you come out of the city, it doesn't look very appealing. Okay? And I've heard, you know, Dee Dee a long time ago, she made a statement. She said, I couldn't live in Tehachapi. There's nothing there. There's no place to go. I said, well, we're 35, 45 minutes from any place you want to go to. But I just like it because I can retrieve out of these places, you know? Okay, and that's what I remember her telling me that, you know. So they get caught up in the Sodom and Gomorrah business, you know, because there's a lot of glamour, a lot of things that allure. Okay, and you take Ruth, you know, she's with the Moabites, you know, kind of living, and you can imagine the things that are going on within those cities, and she was willing to let all that go, besides family, mother, and brothers, and sisters, and all that. Okay, so she had no trust in God. Just looking back speaks volumes. We know where her heart was, according to Matthew 16. That's the one of the Matthew 6, verse 19 through 21. Okay, let's just read that. Just read it. We read it a lot of times, but I like reading it. You know, I think about when I read the scriptures, I apply it to myself. I said, man, I'm sure glad I'm to that degree that I don't want to be in any form of big city environments or where there's a lot of people. I like chapter 6, starting in verse 19. It says, do not store up for yourself, treasures on earth. Do you think Lot and all them, do you think they stored up some pretty fancy stuff during the time in their stay in Sodom and Gomorrah? What drew them over there in the first place? Remember when Abraham gave Lot the choice?
The choice, that's what he chose.
What attracted him about Sodom and Gomorrah?
See.
It was an oasis.
It was green, yeah.
Green, palm trees, you know. Mm-hmm. as opposed to living out there in pump tent, you know. Okay, that's flesh, brother. That's all flesh. Okay. If you're not in the spiritual things of God and seeking the spiritual environments that are not going to influence us in any other way, okay, you're in the flesh and you're looking for flesh, I would never be here.
But there's got to be something more to than just it being green, because there's nothing wrong with nature and having greenery and going to a nice, pretty place to, you know, to spend some time, but or even live. But there must have been something else that he has seen. It might have been the city portion of it.
Well, what also. It is to me is everybody wanted that. Those who are just thinking fleshly, that's where you're going to go.
As far as the city or the nature?
The city and the beauty. We see Los Angeles.
Well, that was a beautiful place at
that
time.
Yeah, it is. City of Angels.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Angelos.
I mean, I can understand people wanting to go there, but
back then,
you can't hardly find that much anymore.
But look what it went back in those days.
Yeah.
The early settlers in LA area.
Right.
Nothing in comparison to what it is today. Mm-hmm. Okay. It was a beautiful place to go. Widespread, beautiful vision. I mean, I can imagine what it was like back in the day. And if you ever talk to anybody who's still alive, it might have been there 80, 90 years ago. And so, oh, this is a, you know, it was a city of angels here. A lot of space, rivers, and beautiful trees, you name it. But everybody liked it too. Started piling in. Every time we keep advertising a little Tehachapi, you get more people coming in, okay? And so, you know, that kind of stuff. Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy. Okay? And where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves. Okay? These are all personal choices. Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroy and where thieves do not break in. Or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So you can tell that Lot's wife, that's where her heart was at. But man, it cost her dearly. It really cost her dearly. Just looking back, okay, speaks volumes. Okay, now let's look at another character. Another character here. Remember Mr. Achan?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He had two strikes against him. The first one was, just like the wife of Lot. Like you said, first thing he told him, you know, don't look back. That was the command from God. So she disobeyed that command. Now she was dead after that. So even if she did look back, man, if her heart was still back there, even though she came forward and forward, you know. Okay. But that was one strike, and the same thing here with Achan. Okay? Achan, he had two strikes against him. One of them, he was disobedient to God's command. And what was the command under this? Remember Achan and what he did and what he took?
Yeah.
It was under a what?
It was under the ban.
Under a ban. Meaning,
take it.
Yeah, meaning this belongs to God.
Right.
That was his first bad move. That did him in. That was bad enough. Okay? He disobeyed God's command. Okay? He coveted what was not his. That was the second strike. He coveted what was not his. So he was dead meat all the way around. Okay? He coveted what was not his. This decision cost him everything. Even his own life. Okay? Even his own life, but not just his own life, but what I mean, everything, what was that? After God segregated him, and it's funny how God went through families, relationship, all that, and broke it all the way down to, boom, right down to Achan and his family. I was looking at that as a man. God, why didn't you just pick the guy out? You know who it is, but he went by tribe, by family, and on and on and on. Okay. And then it came right down, and a lot fell on him. And everybody was affiliated with him, they all died. Family, children, animals, everything that belonged to Achan was buried and burnt.
Why was that? Why did they do that? Because I'm not sure we can assume that the whole family knew about him stealing this stuff.
My guess would be that they knew. My guess would be that they were in cahoots with their own father.
Hmm.
Okay? And like I remember one time, even Greg brought out years ago, something similar. He says, don't think that the kids were innocent in a lot of this stuff. They grew up in it. Okay? They grew up in it. And so, when their mom and dad did something, they were right along with them. And I remember he brought some scriptures on that to show. Okay, see, the kids were already ruined and destroyed because of the practices and the behavior of the parents. Okay, so he hid it in his tent. So it's hard for me not to believe that they understood, you know, that what was going down. If they did know, they should have confronted him. But even if he did it secretly, and maybe they didn't know, there's a reason why God says take him out. Because he knows the hearts of everybody that he took out. The animals, if anybody was innocent altogether, it would be the animals. But God says, no, take them all out. And there's a good reason. Right now I couldn't really give you a real good other than the fact that it's very possible a lot of them knew about it. He wanted to eliminate anything. And that, when they heaped those stones and they burned them up and all that stayed there for a long time. That was seen for a long time. Because it said in that pile is still there to this day. And we know why that, the reason for that, right?
Just so it'd be a sign of what not to do.
It's a sign that says, man, remember this pile here? Tell your children, tell your family the story behind Achan and what they did. So they will be deterred from going in the same direction. So you can see that there's a lot of good, we know that God has good reasons why he does what he does. Even though sometimes we don't quite understand it. You know, especially today, you know, children. What about the children? The only way I can explain it, a lot of those children are probably grown. Okay? And already corrupted to a certain degree. And of course, the little ones, if there were babies involved in that family, well, we know God showed mercy even on the little ones. So that's the only way I can explain this, why he had to take out everything that evolved around him. Everything evolved around him. But it sent a message, I guarantee you that, it sent a message to the rest of the tribes and their family. Okay, if you guys pull this down, any of you, okay, I would take you and your family and your animal just like we did here. The same thing that happened to him will happen to you. So it's a deterrent. It's a deterrence when God's trying to get a message across. And God knows how to get a message across. Even though we don't like his tactic, but in all reality, he's trying to spare many families from going in that direction. And many people dying. So he takes out one because of what he did. And besides the fact that he sinned against God, number one. Okay, and the Bible says there's time that you can't even pray for him. Don't you even shed a tear. Because they have sinned against me. They have sinned against me. And so it would be a testimony against them, you know, to the rest of the families or tribes. And so that's one thing I can see, that why God has his reasons for doing what he does. You know, like I said, we don't quite understand it. He said, one more bad example. In making a bad decision, remember Ananias and Mrs. Sapphira? Oh, these two people, I tell you. These valued what others thought about them, okay, more than what God thinks about them. They value more what people said about them, because you know the whole story there. They wanted to be honored before men, okay? rather than to be approved and honored by God. So, for all the wrong reasons, they did what they did. Lied to the Holy Spirit. Conspired to do what they did. Why do we, as men, always, like, we don't believe that God sees us. We don't believe that God heard what we said. You know, and it's funny how human nature is, you know. These people, what were they thinking? Apparently they weren't. That you can actually hide from God in the things you do in secret? You know, but man will try it over and over and over. The priests, look at what they were doing. Look what they were doing. Behind the walls. When he took that prophet, I said, I want you to show you something through this little hole. I want you to see what these priests are doing behind this wall. And they think I don't see them. Where can you go to hide from me? And it tells you, nowhere. Because it tells you everywhere you go, a deep part of the ocean, you go here, the grave, no matter where. There's no way you can hide from God. Why do we tempt to do the things that we do sometimes, you know, thinking that we're going to pull it over on God? Oh, we get ourselves into little minor sins and stuff in here, but and, you know, you clean up pretty good, you know, a lot of times. But sometimes, man, we pull a big boner, boy, and I'm telling you, that can be very costly sometimes. And they can stay with us for many years to come. Sometimes even your old past tends to want to come up. Well, I didn't think about it back then. A lot of people don't think about what it is. That was when I was a younger person. I said, he said, no, it's coming back and bite me. I says, oh, yeah. Okay. But that sin finds you out, I don't think it applies because you weren't even affiliated with God at that time. You're just living your life. There was no God in your life. And you don't pray, you know. I didn't never acknowledge God. I've always knew that there's a God in heaven. That's all I knew. Okay? That's all I knew. Okay? So they wanted to be honored before men, rather than to be approved or honored by God. Against all the end, and again, at the end, they lost everything, including their own lives. Okay? The devil can and does create a life of ease, if that's what you want. The devil can provide it. Fame and glory and money. Okay? Satan can really provide that. So we gotta be careful how we gain our honor and our glory or our fame, you know. You know, we gotta be careful how all that came about. You know, the prophet talked about to gain wealth by ill gain. You know what that means, huh?
By cheating and lying and
stealing. Cheating and lying, do whatever it takes to get that big pot of gold. Whatever it takes, corruption, deception, and lying. But Pelosi, Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, just to name a few, have done that very thing. The Clintons, all the shady deals, how they got rich. But what good is it doing with all that money they got? They're miserable. Pelosi's worth millions. The Clintons are worth millions. Now Mr. Hunter Biden is worth a few million. Daddy, I don't know how he got his money, you know. Okay. Obama, he had some shady deal going on there. He got rich by becoming the president. They can have it, brother. I'd rather be a pauper man and be right with God and live in a pumpkin in the middle of the desert. And to try to live in a palace, knowing how I got there. Like they always say, the end doesn't always justify the means, right? No, not always. But here's another thing. All these people we just talked about, they affected other people that were affiliated with them. And like I've always said, man, you're not an island. I don't care what you do. Even mom and dad, whatever they do will affect their own children. And vice versa. We are not an island. We need to get out of that mentality. You know, Carrie brought up a Bible study. We were talking about certain things there, and then she said, you know, we're not allowed to be a private people. I understood exactly what she was saying because of the subject we were talking about. My life doesn't belong to me. Doesn't belong to me. So you can't live in an island, so to speak. Okay? But you're not your own in all reality. In the book of Hebrews, I think it says, spread yourself around. Spread yourself around. Avail yourself to other people. Okay? So my life belongs to my brothers, and my brother's life belongs to me. Okay? And that's how we commune with each other. Okay, so we don't have much of a private life. Oh, we have our moments. Carrie has her moments. She has her cup of coffee and has her little Bible devotional with herself. She has those private moments. She does her walks. Those are private moments. But the rest of the day, who owns her? Tony? Her grandchildren? Mom? Dad? Some church members sometimes. Her life is not her own. It's just not. But God gives her her private time from time to time. Okay? So our lives are not basically ours just to be ours. Okay, so the devil can and does create a life of ease. But sadly, God's people sometimes get caught up in this devil's web. He said, all of these examples, bottom line is, they, in all reality, sold out. Sold out. Look what it cost them. Look what it cost them. They pay dearly because they thought the gold was more important. They thought the fame was more important. The honor was more important. You know, all these things. But if God's not involved in our lives, we're just living. We're just existing. Okay, we're just existing. I don't just want to exist, I want to live. Okay? You know, I wouldn't want to have Paul's life. You know? No offense, Paul, but man, I like reading about you and how you came out. You came out okay, but man, I love the Lord as I don't. And none of us have really ever experienced anything close to what Paul experienced and what the Lord Jesus Christ has experienced. And neither one of these two persons and many others never sold out. Never sold out. All these people here, they did not sell out. Christ was their life. For me to live is Christ and to die is gain. Okay, but in the meantime, for now, I live. I live for Him. I eat and I breathe and I walk and I live for Him. That's my life. Okay? And that was the life of the Apostle Paul. Okay, I got half an hour to read 30 pages. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, there are only two books of the Bible named after women, Esther and Ruth. Ruth is also one of the few women who are mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus Christ, found in the book of Matthew. Okay, this was in the times when women were ordinarily included in genealogy. Well, we know what they. It's always been, you women, they have taken a bad rap. You know, and in my mind, women is what makes this world turn around. And God made women, I always say, God made women in a very unique way. Because God knew how they were going to be treated, how they were going to be battered, and how their hearts are going to be different than ours.
I like that movie we seen. Well, we always look at it once in a while. The Good Earth.
Yeah.
And the last part when she's dying.
Yep.
And then she talks to her daughter-in-law. And she gives her advice. And, you know, you take care of your husband and you take care of your husband's father. And, you know, and that's your duty as a wife, you know. One thing she said on the
movie. It's sad to say that many people learn that too late about what they had.
Yeah, that's what he said to me.
So that's what he says. Now I know that you're the best a man can have. But look what it took. And she was a humble woman all the way through. Gave up those two little pearls that meant so much to her. Gave them up because he knew she was going to give them to that other woman. And she just silently just moved on. But at the end, the only thing she asked her to him, her to forgive her for, what was that?
His life, the way he was living, the way he was living.
No, he was telling, asking him to forgive her for leaving him, dying. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I always liked that last part, you know. I just love her character and the whole thing, you know. Okay. The Book of Ruth is a beautiful piece of sacred literature, applauded by many for its literary excellence. And the story, it's an important one. A simple Moabite woman became an essential character in the powerful story of salvation won through the Bible. But I wrote it here, salvation of the soul and salvation of life. Okay? Against all odds. Against all odds. Okay? Widows are drawn to this story of Ruth again and again. A famine in Canaan forced, how do you pronounce his name? Elimelech? Is that your name? Elimelech? And Naomi, along with their two sons, to migrate from Bethlehem to Moab. Their sons married Moabite women, Orpah and Ruth. Orpah means gazelle. I don't know why, but it says it means gazelle. Ruth means friend or companion. Okay. Elimelech passed away. And about 10 years later, both of Naomi's sons died as well. Naomi and Ruth and Orpah are all widows. So everything's going south on them. Everything's going south. Okay, they were not supposed to be number one to live among the Moabites. Okay, God forbid that for them to do so, but they did. But they felt they had reasons because of the famine in the land. And we know that Abraham did it, Jacob did it, and Naomi and her husband, they all did the same thing. So we just tend to not really trust in God. But it seemed like God, that part sometimes really puzzles me. Even though they disobeyed God and they went, Abraham came back more wealthier. Jacob came back more wealthier. And Naomi came back because she changed her name out to Mara, which means bitter. Because her original name was Pleasant. He said, don't call me Naomi no more. Call me Mara, M-A-R-A, Mara, meaning bitter, because she lost everything.
Right.
Okay? But even Naomi didn't realize what she had when Ruth was clinging on to her. She did not realize where this was going. She couldn't foresee what was going to happen. So it's a pretty exciting story when you really look at it. He says, the world is not kind to widows today. And apparently back then, a widow and being a Moabite was a double whammy. It's a double whammy, you know. He said, and being a widow was even more difficult back then. In fact, Naomi encouraged both girls to go back to their parents and find husbands who can take care of them. Ruth refused with a passionate speech to Naomi. A compassionate speech to Naomi. It says, entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. Okay, for whither thou go, I will go, and wherever thou lodge, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Okay, where thou diest, will I die. And there will I bury, there I will be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more so if but death part you and me. Okay, that's a heck of a testimony, ain't it? And she followed through. Well, we are supposed to make this kind of a statement when we come to the word of the baptism, that we're surrendering everything. Surrendering our freedom to do whatever we want and come back under a bond slave situation, but with a free will. You come in with a free will. And that's something we're going to be looking at in the book of Romans, chapter 1 and verse 2. Okay? The word bondservant. Okay? So here is one of the best testimonies you can read, and you can apply this in so many ways. You know, and measure yourself, and I measure myself. Did I make a statement like this? Have I stayed the course and not have fallen away? Okay? Irregardless of things that come up in our lives. Okay? How difficult was it going to be for her to go, as a Moabite woman, to go in the land of Judah and the land of Israel, knowing all her history, knowing what her family did to these people? But what motivated her to even go that route?
Probably the Bible.
No, just personally between her. What motivated her to decide not to stay in her country, to go with Naomi, to go to Israel with her? What motivated the Lord Jesus Christ to come into this world?
The love, yeah.
The love. Naomi loved this woman. And I'm sure Naomi has talked a lot about her God. But I'm sure she was being pretty honest, you know. I said, well, the God of my God is in Jerusalem. I left. And that's why my name turned to bitterness. Because God's taken so much away from me. We had no business coming out here. We should have trusted God more so. But I guarantee you that she instructed those two girls. I don't know if she was trying to convert them or just to educate them, but she was talking about her God. How can Ruth make such a statement? How can she make such a statement? When you meet somebody yourself and they've never really heard much of anything, had no interest in anything, you know, it's going to take a little time to convince them about who God is and why you need to be saved. Why does it take so long, you know? A little here, a little there, you just keep spicing it and just letting them know. Until the day finally came. What prompted her to leave after she lost her husband and lost her two sons? Was it shortly thereafter when her sons were gone? And because they were the last two to die because the husband went first. And then the two boys, how far apart, I don't know. So sometime thereafter, she had nothing. Her immediate family was gone. All she had was two daughter-in-laws. He said, what can I do for you, girls? I'm too old. I'm too old to have any more children. And you would have to wait for them. And that reminded me of Amy when she was wanting a husband. And she said, well, maybe I'll wait for one of these twin boys.
The young ones.
Maybe I'll wait for one of these guys, you know. Okay.
Well, yeah, some of them were, I think, when they were straight, you know, so some of the guys who were dating, but they turned.
Yeah, I turned them.
I turned them over to become gay.
But anyhow, there's a lot involved in here, and use your imagination. But I know that Naomi was talking and conversing with the two girls, and knowing that they were Moabite women, knowing that they were probably involved to a certain degree in their idol worshiping or what have you. So Ruth and Naomi both returned to Bethlehem. Bethlehem means what?
House of Bethel?
I think it says something, house of bread. House of bread. Okay, because apparently the famine was over. The famine was over. Okay. And it was during the time of the barley season. Coincidental? Coincidental? The barley season. And of all the barley fields, how did Naomi end up in Boaz's field?
They bought her?
Huh?
They bought her and then she started working for him?
No. When they first got back into Bethlehem in Judea, when they first got back, okay, Naomi started to advise Ruth. Okay. Now all this is providential, even though you can see Naomi leading her in a certain direction. Okay, because she went right away. Naomi wanted to go out in the field and start working to provide food for her and her mother-in-law.
Okay.
So she went out to those fields and asked permission to work those fields. Okay, so there's a story all behind that, but you can see the providential care of God. The providential care of God. I don't know if I wrote it in here. Where did I? No, I must have noted it somewhere else. Something about, you can see God's mercy and grace working through providential process. Okay? Because God had plans. Naomi and Ruth had no idea, especially Ruth, had no idea she was going to be a part of a line that was going to produce some pretty fantastic people. So Ruth and Naomi wolves return back to Bethlehem. They have nothing. So Ruth goes to work in the grain fields. So they have enough food to eat. It's there that she met Boaz. So I don't see anywhere where Naomi told her to go to a particular field. I don't remember reading anything like that. She was going to go work out in the fields. Okay, and she ended up in Boaz's field. And she didn't realize that he was kin to her husband. Okay, so all of this is just gradually falling together. She had no clue, but the mom did, but we'll read further then. Is there that she met Boaz, who also turned out to be her redeemer. Did she know that? No. After Boaz secured this place as her redeemer, the two are married and later blessed with a son named Obed, the grandfather of King David. The grandfather of King David. That was Obed. But see, this doesn't give you, this kind of leaves out some of the story. So Naomi, when Ruth came back, brought this up and told her what she did that day and on, that she met this person named Boaz. Well, Naomi knew that. And what did Naomi start telling Ruth to do? You go over there. Stay there. And toward the end of the barley season, then she advised her, you go and you lay with him in his bed at the foot of the bed. And I read something that some commentators said that was something that she should not have done. That was not right. That was not decent. What's wrong with that? Did Ruth do something bad?
No.
Well, it's like most people say it didn't look right.
Yeah. But there's a reason.
Room. They're in the same room, you know.
But that was the custom.
Yeah.
When she did that, well, that movie was just good earth. What did that woman do? Give that boy what? Give her her shoe.
Oh, yeah.
And what did she say this is supposed to be? I didn't forget the word now. She told him, you know, if you accept this shoe, that you're fancying me.
You're fancying her, yeah.
You're fancying me.
Yeah.
And that's her father's, his father's wife,
yeah.
Second wife.
Oh, that was his stepmother.
Okay, so that was the custom with these Chinese people.
Yeah.
The shoe. Mm-hmm. When the mother saw that that shoe fell out of his deal, she knew exactly what that meant. And she got bitter. She got bitter. Well, the same thing was Ruth, and doing what she did. That was basically a proposal, so to speak. There was nothing indecent about it. They didn't have a relationship with each other. He was so drunk, he fell asleep, but she lay right until the morning came up. And Boaz knew exactly what that was.
So that was that a proposal when you slept in your mom's bed and I slept in the sofa? New Year's Day, New Year's Night.
Yeah, oh boy. Sometimes I wish your memory would fail you. But see, so that was a proposal, and Boaz knew that. So, right away, he sends her out before the morning really dawns. Sends her out of there because he knew that she is a Moabite woman in my house. So to spare her from anything, they can come down. Told her to leave real early and go home. But he knew exactly what happened. He knew exactly what she was doing. Okay, so that was a custom. So there was nothing immoral about it or indecent about it. Ruth's story is an ordinary, perhaps that what makes it so compelling, she doesn't come from a famous family. She doesn't have a great rich, okay, or great position. Ruth is just a widow. One from an enemy nation to boot. One from an enemy nation. At that, nothing is going in her favor. But she's brave, and her faith never wavered. Never wavered. Well, that when I seen that word waver, that's the same word that they used for Abraham. When God promised him a son, when did he finally get that promised son? How old was he?
90s. 90. Was it 90?
Was 90 or 100?
He was older than Sarah, though.
Yeah.
I think it was 100. 99.
Yeah, he was 100.
Yeah, he was 100.
But God says in the New Testament that Abraham never wavered. Mm-hmm. Wavering meaning in unbelief.
Yeah.
In unbelief.
Mm-hmm.
She
just... Sarah didn't believe it.
Yeah, Sarah was just trying to speed things up, you know. You know, she got in the way, I would imagine, a lot of things. But there was some time when God said, listen to her, she's right on this one here. Pay attention, you know. He said, and yet, the life of a foreign widow who was nothing, who had nothing, became so important that it's included in the Bible and her name recognized in the lineage of Jesus. He said, as you read through the book of Ruth, you won't find any place where God's voice thunders down to her as she might in other Bible stories. No earthly shattering miracles like the Red Sea. Nothing spectacular, nothing like the parting of the Red Sea was parting. Happened in her life. But what you do see is an ordinary and challenging life shaped by faith and guided by God she believed in, the God she believed in. And today we can look back and see the mighty ways her life was used. Okay, while there were many things to learn from the story of Ruth, there are 7 powerful lessons from this tiny book that stood out with this writer. Okay, there is hope, even in the most devastating times of our lives. The book of Ruth begins by looking at the life of Naomi. After moving to Moab with her husband and son, she lost her husband and became a widow. Just 10 years later, her sons died. Okay, 10 years later, her sons died too. It seemed that Naomi's entire life crumbled in those years. In fact, when she returned to Bethlehem, she tells everyone, call me not Naomi, call me Mara. Is that how you pronounce it? M-A-R-A?
Mm-hmm.
Mara? For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. got very bitter to me. But whose choice was it?
It was hers.
Her husband.
Oh, her husband.
He's the one that took him out. He's the head of that house. He took him all the way to the morgue, knowing better than to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay? But she got treated bitterly because that's what they decided to do. And yeah. What caused the life, the death of these two boys, I don't know. Mm-hmm. What caused the life of the husband to die, I don't know. But it's pretty devastating when you lose your husband and you both the kids and you're left alone. You're left alone and she's in Moab, okay? So she said God was dealt. But sometimes God has to use certain things to get certain people to turn in a different direction. Sometimes God's forced to have to do something to bring somebody to their senses. There was a story I just read. See if you understand it. Okay, it's a true story that this man, he was in St. Paul's, a cathedral, I guess, in Rome, and he was painting, he was a painter. Okay, and he was up there in his big scalpels, and he was walking backwards, looking at everything that he did, just examining everything, walking backwards. And then I realized that he was getting to the edge of that plank. And that would have been a heck of a drop. And there's a guy down there watching him, walking backwards. I don't want to yell, because it'll scare him, and he might just, boom, you know, lose his balance or something. So what did he do? He got a paintbrush with paint, and splattered out his painting on top. Okay. I guess he must have threw it out there. And then when the guy seen it, well, he got mad. I said, he looked at it, and he looked down there, but that got his attention. Uh-huh. That got his attention. But the guy explained to him, he said, well, you were heading over that thing. You were backing up, and you were getting to the edge of that thing. I had to get your attention one way. And I figured if I splattered your masterpiece, I would get your attention. Mm. But you're alive. Sometimes God has to do that. Take people out of our lives to get us to see something. Okay? I don't know if these boys were saved or not. It didn't say anything about that. But when she realized her whole family was gone, what else did she have? What other choice did she have? But to go back to Bethlehem. Okay? So all the reasons for being there were all gone. Whatever their plans were, you know, like James said, if I'm going to go to such and such a city and do business and do this, and I go here and I go over there, I said, well, not if it's not God's will. Now remember, Ruth was the time of the judges. This is during the time of the judges. And Judges is very famous in one verse of scripture. Everybody was doing that which was right in their own eyes. That was the time that Israel was under the judges, and they were doing whatever they want. Okay? So if that contributed to them making that decision to go into Moab, I don't know. The book of Ruth begins by looking at the life of Naomi. After moving to Moab with her husband and son, she loses her husband and Ann becomes a widow. I already read that. Okay. Okay, let me go down to this one a minute. It's crushing to lose a spouse. Yes, it is. It's heart wrenching to lose a child. Yes, it is. And Ruth, she also lost her husband. She left behind her family to go with Naomi back to Bethlehem. When these two women arrived back in Naomi's hometown, they destitute and devastated and broke. Broke. Okay, that's how they came back. That's why Naomi says, call me Mara, bitterness. I lost everything. Okay, neither of them knew how they survived. But both of them had faith that somehow things will work out. Well, I don't know if it applies here, but I would imagine so, you know, all things work together for the good to them that love God. But sometimes those things that are working out for the good, for God, is not an easy road to go down. It can cost you. Personally, physically, family maybe, something. Okay. They had hope for their future. Naomi already felt that God had dealt very bitterly with her, yet she continued to hope. Okay, Ruth was basically her hope. Ruth created a new hope for Naomi. If Ruth would have left, and then, of course, the other girl, Orpha, she went back to her people. If Ruth would have left too, she would have had no hope. She had nothing. She lost everything now, completely everything. But Ruth was her hope, her glimpse of hope that maybe, because of her, something will become of my life. Ruth brought worth into Naomi's life. Okay, lay aside her pains, okay? Left her home and family, and turned her face to the future with hope as she journeyed to a new place with her mother-in-law. Both of these women showed faith and cling to the belief that better days were ahead. Okay, no matter how difficult life can get, there's always going to be hope if you're staying in the direct will of God. Even though you may be going through something, there's always hope at the end of the tunnel. Even if it don't turn out the way you would have liked it, God says, no, it's better this way. I know that's the way you wanted to go, but I want you to go this way. I have my reasons. And sometimes we got to wait. We may never know why until time later, and then you can look back. Oh, man. Now I know why God had me go this route. Why? I had a better plan, but His plan was better than mine. When life brings devastation, it is not easy to hope. It's hard to have faith. But when things are the most difficult, that's when we need faith and hope the most. Okay? That's when it really kicks in. In the moment where life fleets like it's crushing you, feels like it's crushing you, okay, start with a little faith, Hebrews 11:1. Okay, you all know what that means, huh? Okay, it reminds us that now faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. For looking at the book of Ruth, we can see that even when we can't see beyond our pain in His plan, we can have hope that our story isn't over. Okay, that our story isn't over. Better days are coming. He says, number two, the path is not our final destiny when we trust God. In everything, at the very beginning of the book of Ruth, she's living in Moab, her mother's nation. Okay, Moab was a place that most Israelites did not... Man, I get confused. Okay. Did not. There was an enemy nation, and Israelites tended to look down on the Moabites. On top of that, she was a widow. She was childless, and she lived with her mother-in-law. That journey to Israel must have been frightening. She made a choice to stay with Naomi and help her, all the while knowing that she was going to a country that wouldn't like her very much. Her country of origin already made her outcast, and being childless, a widow, gave her plenty of reasons to shrink back into her shell and simply live out her days in obscurity. Okay, but that's not what she did. She declared that she was going with Naomi to Bethlehem. Okay, left her country and her family behind, and refused to let her past hold her back. Okay, she chose to serve God, the God of Naomi, and she believed that there was still life left in her, to live. He said, no matter your past, you will have a purpose. Your past is not your final destination when you make a choice in faith. While your confidence may be wavering, God promised or not. He said, doing the right thing often takes great sacrifices. Doing the right thing isn't always easy. In fact, it often takes great sacrifice. Naomi reminded Ruth that she was free to leave and go back to her family. She was free to go back to her gods and free to search for a new husband to take care of her. But even when even when her sister-in-law chose to go back, Ruth made a different decision. Ruth chose to go with her mother-in-law, showing not only how dedicated she was to Naomi, but also her dedication to God of Israel. In that instant, she decided, thy people shall be my people, thy God my God. It was a sacrifice for Ruth to refuse to return to her family. Her commitment to journey on with Naomi was a beautiful, selfless act. Okay, a stunning example of the love of Christ. The same Christ who would be of her bloodline years later. Man, she never foresaw that coming. If she realized that, you know, we do, because we read about it. Okay? Sharing openly about her relationship with God brings intimacy to relationships. The story of Naomi and Ruth were wound together closely, that their stories are nearly inseparable. In fact, we know more about the relationship between these two women than we do about them individually. Okay? They didn't talk much about Naomi other than the part when she, you know, they picked up on her when she was in Moab. Their relationship offered a beautiful mode of a good relationship, a stunning look at the blending of lives. He said the two women shared great sorrow, but they also shared great affection for one another. We also see the freedom in their relationship. Naomi loved Ruth, but she was willing to let her go back to her family. Yeah? As much as she loved her, she was not going to interfere in her making her own decision. God does the same thing with us, doesn't he? He gives you all these wonderful things, but gives you the choice to decide which way you want to go. Choice, choice, choice. But it was Ruth's love for Naomi that made her willing to leave her country to return to Israel. Even though Naomi knew that a new marriage for Ruth would change their relationship, she still played an important part in the arranging of the marriage of Boaz and Ruth. You know, well, remember the movie Green Fried Tomatoes? You know, the two girls, they became real good friends, you know. And then when she told her she was going to get married, so they kind of parted their friendship. That's when I thought about this, that Naomi was willing to arrange this marriage, even though it was going to part her and Ruth. She's going to live her own life now. She's got a husband. Okay, so she thought. That's probably what she was thinking was going to happen. But she was willing to let her go, okay, in order for her to be secure. Okay? It was their faith that was at the center of their relationship and intimate communication. Through Naomi, Ruth learned about God, the God of Israel, and chose to put her trust in Him. Naomi's ability to be open and honest with Ruth about her relationship with God is inspiring. You don't think Naomi told her that she failed her God, that she's backslidden, okay, she disobeyed my God, my real God, and that's why I'm here. I'm over here in pure disobedience and rebellion. You don't think she told her about the bad side of things? Besides the good things about God? So she was honestly open with her. We often feel like we need to keep our questions and thoughts about God to ourselves within our relationship. We don't usually share our unedited feelings and thoughts about God with friends or family members. Sometimes we're afraid that sharing our questions and doubts and disappointments will turn other people away from God, when actually sharing about our relationships with God openly can bring more intimacy to our relationship and help draw other people to their own faith. Okay, you know, a lot of times we have stories we can tell when we've been through some difficult times, you know, and to share with them, you know, instead of being isolated, you know, and people will see, well, how did you survive that? And it wasn't easy. But through God's grace, man, you know, He's got me through this day. So it's a testimony even in that. Even if it's a testimony of something you did wrong, now you got to live that life of wrong, but you live through it. And you prove without shying away or going into a tunnel, so to speak. Okay? That's a testimony in itself. In itself. Naomi was open with Ruth about the joy, the fear, the pain, and the anguish that came with her faith in God. She admitted that she felt that God had dealt with her bitterly. And yet it was that sharing and intimacy that was the foundation of the deep relationship these two women had shared. I got one more now. I have this paper, man. Page and a half. To honor God, honor by God. Like Ruth, we also need to work to be women and men of integrity. God used unlikely people for His purpose. Ruth was a poor hunting or outcast widow. She grew up in an evil country, an enemy of Israel. She was childless. She moved to a foreign land, where she knew no one but her mother-in-law. Man, that's all you know, just her. I meet people at the Hatchby, and they're just their family. And sometimes it's just a husband or a wife. They don't have no family whatsoever. They're all scattered all over the place. Yeah. I don't understand that.
That's what's called that Lady Francis, the one that's a friend of Angie.
Okay, oh yeah.
She said all her kids are all scattered all over the United States. She's only got two of them living here, actually, attached to me. I think she's got seven kids with
them. Yeah. But it must have been very difficult for her, being a Moabite woman, being a widow, no children, no husband, and to come into a land that she knows how they feel about her. That's no reason not to go. Not to go. Oprah decided she didn't want to go that route. She'd rather go back to that. Okay? Okay? They struggled with poverty. She had to go gather behind the harvests in the fields to get a bit of barley so they could survive. Anyone who looked at this foreign woman, okay, would have never guessed that God would choose her bloodline for the line of the promised Redeemer, Jesus Christ. Who would have thought of it? Who would have thought of it? Through Ruth's story, we learned that God used the most unlikely people for His purpose. Well, I'm a most unlikely person. You might have an example, and I know some other people that say, man, God's, man, you picked the bottom of the barrel, Lord. He said, yep, that's right. I like the bottom of the barrel people. He said, just look at the five women mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus. Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, Bathsheba, okay, and Mary. Tamar resorted to trickery, okay, to bear a son. Okay, remember Tamar? She went to bed with her husband's father.
Oh, I thought so, okay.
Was it Judah? I think it was Judah. But anyhow, he was supposed to give her son, the next son, and he died, and he kept promising. She never did.
Okay,
And one day he was out there messing around, going down Union Avenue Street, you know. And she said that he didn't have the money, but he gave her his staff and all this, and that's what hung him, you know. Okay, that's what he's talking about. Tamar resorted to trickery to bear a son. So she got impregnated by her own father-in-law. Rahab was a prostitute whose faith saved her from the crushing walls of Jericho. Ruth was a Moabite and a widow. Bathsheba, referred to as Uriah's wife in the genealogy of Jesus, okay, who became David's wife after David took her from him, from himself, and killed her husband. Man, that's a crazy history, huh? Mm-hmm. He says, Mary was a young virgin who was already engaged to Joseph when she became pregnant with Jesus, and she showed great courage in her willingness to bear the scorn and the shame that came with the pregnancy that occurred before marriage. So you imagine how they treated her.
Oh, yeah.
Well, even Joseph, as honorable as he was, he was going to give her a written certificate of divorce. Okay? Ruth reminds us that no matter what lies in her past, and no matter what, how difficult her circumstances may be, a little bit of faith makes a huge difference. And even in our obscurity and in our mess of what may be our lives, God finds a way to use the most unlikely people in ways that we could never imagine. And that's the end. Okay, we're done with this lesson. So pray for me as I continue. I've been studying on Romans for quite a while, just gathering information about Rome and background.